I am a mythical Pandora,
sent here to judge the universe.
Do you have any idea what the weapon is?
It could very well be a planet killer.
I would really like to go on this mission, Admiral.
Imagine having the power to annihilate entire worlds, and even the stars themselves.
Humanity is worth saving.
What have you done?
Pandora. New episodes premiere October 4th. Free next day only on the CW app.
New episodes of Pandora premiere every Sunday at 8 p.m. on the CW in the U.S., and you can watch it anytime on the CW app. Season 1 is now streaming for free on Amazon Prime. Welcome back to Unboxing Pandora, the podcast where we take a behind-the-scenes look into the hit CW show, Pandora. My name is Peter Holmstrom. I'm the writer's assistant on the show, and we'll be your host today as we do a podcast commentary for episode 9 of season 2. I have two very special guests here today. First up, he is the co-writer of the episode, executive producer on the show, and probably the most frequent guest I've had on the show at this point, Mr. Steve Crozier. Steve, welcome back.
Am I the most frequent guest? I guess
I feel like it. I want to say thank you for constantly coming back and humoring me on these little deep digressions.
All right.
On the other side of the Zoom call, also on the other side of the world, he is the director of this episode as well as directing 4 episodes this season. He's our man in Berlin. He's Buddy Giovinanzo. Buddy, hi.
Hey, guys. Happy to be here. Happy to be anywhere, actually, in these days.
That's very true. Very true. So we are doing a podcast commentary for episode 9. To the audience out there, to the listeners, we are watching an ad-free version of the show. So if you are watching it on the CW app, you will need to pause the podcast when the ads do pop up. So guys, we'll get right into it. On a countdown, I'll say 3, 2, 1, and then say play. And when I say play, we'll all press play together. All right. 3, 2, 1, and play.
Okay.
Buddy, my first question I want to ask for you, you directed 4 episodes this season, all back to back. I can only imagine that was a logistical nightmare. Walk us through a bit of that process.
Well, you know what? Normally, to my American friends, my American director friends, it is a logistical nightmare. But here in Germany, we direct 4 episodes when we do series. I've done series now work. I've done feature films out here and also series. And they don't really ever hire a director to do 1 or 2 shows. You basically get hired to do 3 to 4. And at least in Pandora, the story connected. It was one story arc that carried you through the season. But there are a lot of crime shows that don't have any connection from one episode to the next. The guest roles are completely different actors. So I've been doing that for years. So I've been able to jump in and out of stories. You know, there'll be one day where I'm doing 4 different separate stories with separate actors, separate locations. So I was sort of trained by doing that, you know, trained in that from working out here for so long. So when Mark, you know, offered me that many episodes, I think the show is great. So I was really happy to do any episodes, but doing the 4 episodes just was awesome for me. And I was prepared for it. And I think for a lot of directors, it's really confusing, but you know what? It's like a muscle. You know, if you exercise it, you get used to it and you build up a certain skill at it. And so I just want to say one thing about the scene we're looking at now, the after dinner scene. The woman that's playing Osborne's wife, Laura, is a German actress that I auditioned for a TV show last year. And when she came on set, she spoke perfect English. So I don't know how it came up, but I said, "Where do you live?" And she says, "I live in Berlin." And then I realized, holy shit, this is the German actress that, you know, I auditioned with. Her name was Katrine. And then we talked, and it was just really like, you know, for that moment, it was like being back home.
That's awesome.
Max and Laura, actress, too, you could speak in code and no one on the set knew what you were talking about.
You know, Steve, for a change, you're right, because, you know, they're all talking Bulgarian. We have no idea what's going on. So me, Max, and Katrine, we were able to turn the tables for this one day.
But that was a funny moment because I just had no idea that she actually was from Berlin. I thought, I knew she lived in the UK, but her name sounds very French. So I thought, yes. But then she lives in Berlin. This was a great scene. This flashback, Max got to light it differently, has a different look because it's 10 years ago. Obviously the clothing is differently. Osborne's hair is radically different than we've seen before.
Yeah.
But this was a great, you know, a lot of information gets doled out here. And great performances by everyone. Originally, it was supposed to be Eve at the dinner party, but that actress had already worked her episodes and, you know, couldn't come back because of the pandemic. So we inserted Strahl instead, but I think it's really good with Strahl. You know, it's a lot of so backstory strong. Between the guys. I think it made it even better.
It's beautiful.
I think it works very well.
Tribute to the writing here, because what I love about this scene is also the chess metaphor, because the entire show is really like chess, except with real blood. You know, there's so much trickery, and there's so much strategy, and there's, you know, everybody has a secret. Everybody has a move that they're saving to make. And I just thought the chess metaphor really worked perfectly in the scene, and it works for the characters. They're all playing chess. You know, when she tells Osborne at the end of the scene.
Grant, the co-writer with me, who, you know, put in the origin of the chess story. This is, you know, Mark came up with the story for the episode. Bria wrote the scene. I changed it with Strahl, but Bria did a great job, like, you know, including the origin of the chessboard here.
Yeah, I just think it worked. I love, like, when things in the objects of the story work for the character as well. And this is just, it worked perfectly. It's really great.
Steve, talk to us a bit about the writing process between you and Bria.
And I had always planned out that episodes 9 and 10 would be kind of a two-parter, sort of like the end of last season. And so I was going to team up with Bria to write this one. And we wrote it all during pandemic, so we never actually met in person. We did everything through emails and phone calls and stuff. And I think I had written up the outline. Mark changed some of the outline. But then Bria, we worked really fast. I mean, Bria's great. I mean, she's obviously a director and actress, but she's also a very good writer. So, you know, like with Darren Scott, I'm like, hey, I'll look better if I team up with really good writers. So we split the script. Bria did the teaser, first two acts, and I did the back half. And she did a great first draft. It was really solid. I didn't have to change some stuff, but not a ton. And you know, went to Mark, and we were just... This one really came together really quickly and fast. It was a easy writing process, you know. And some of the scenes at the end of the episode, I think, were put into 10. You know, Mark and I were always flexible on some of the stuff that comes at the end of the episode. But the end of it was always, the last scene was stayed the same in number 9. That was always going to be the same last scene, which we'll get to. But, you know, Bria and I, it was a breeze. It was really quick and... Look, I mean, we did all the episodes during pandemic, so there was really not a lot of procrastination. You couldn't really go out and do much stuff, so it was enjoying to be able to be busy and productive. And Noah's really great in this one. You know, the bookending it in the prison there, he's really good.
Yeah. He's a tremendous actor. I loved working with him. Just really so classy.
Yeah, and he's been, you know, you see him at the end of... episode 8, and he comes back in a big way in 9 and 10. So he actually traveled, you know, he was at the beginning of the season and then went back to England and then came back at the end. It was crazy. The last time I actually seen him was in January in LA, and then I saw him again, you know, in September. I'm like, man, the world has changed since we last saw each other.
Yeah.
This Luke Featherston stuff was all shot previously. I mean, you know, the scheduling of a lot of these episodes changed because of actor availability, the pandemic stuff. You know, so it was a very complicated way to produce the show. But thankfully, we had the time to finish all the scripts before we started production. That was a huge plus.
Steve, was it ever planned that Ben Cross was going to play, you know, the role here in these episodes? Or did you always decide to go with the young...
We probably were going to use both of them, but Ben Cross definitely. And then we heard about his declining health and eventual passing away. And then, you know, so we definitely, that was unfortunate. we loved having him. He was local, but now we're back on the planet. This is actually from last season, episode 109. This is a planet that Xander and Raylan and Jax visited, where an Earth arc ship had crashed and they built a colony. So, hey, we're back on the back lot. I mean, a lot of the producing of this season had to do with being economical and going to locations that were, you know, outdoors is helpful and limited background.
This street was dressed for us because it didn't look anything like this before we shot, and I'm glad they did. They really made it look run down. None of the background.
Yeah, they did a great job with it last year in terms of like the overgrowth and the burnt out vehicles and stuff like that. So it had a good look. I mean, this whole sequence of, yes, with Xander and Tierney together, Mark and I wanted to put them together at some point. Weren't sure how it would work out, but it's really, I think they're really good together.
Yeah, great together. You know, probably my one regret as a director when I watched these scenes in this alley is that because the alley was so short, they have to walk so slow. I would have liked to have had them pick up their pace. We tried it a few times on set, but we just couldn't direct, you know, I couldn't direct the scene to work if they had walked at a faster pace. So I just had to make them walk as slow enough for the amount of set that we had. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but when I watch it.
So do we have to keep Oliver's broken left wrist hidden, which you could see it occasionally at certain times, but.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Episode, it was all your episode. I think it was episode 7 through 10. It was right after number 6. Thankfully, it was after number 6 because he had a lot of action stuff to do.
That's right.
Buddy, I love what you did here. We never see this background guy actually in person, but the reflection of the glass is excellent. Nice. I love this.
Yeah. That just, you know what? That very offered creepy itself. When he turned around and I saw it, then, you know, Max agreed. We just said, you know, we have to shoot this guy this way instead of doing a reverse on him. It's creepier.
And credit to that background guy. If you remember, they had to, like, you know, hold his arm and walk him to the set because he couldn't see anything with those contact lenses.
Oh, geez.
So he probably, you know, was like, oh, I got a job on Pandora as like a one day background person. He's like, guess what? You're going to be, can't see anything.
I think Clive is a great character. You know, Clive just really works for me.
Nighttime at the planet.
You know, it's funny. When I first met Tina, I heard that Tina was coming in from London. So I assumed she was British. And when I met her and I heard her accent, I said, what the hell? You're not British. And she heard my accent. And she said, and you're not German. It turned out we're both Italians from New York. She's from Long Island. I'm from Staten Island. So when I was hearing her talk on set, it was like talking to a cousin. I mean, she really just sounded like family to me. We just bonded over that, you know, thing that she thought I was going to be German because I live in Germany. I thought she was going to be British because she lived in England. And she's just a tremendous actress.
Come on, you guys are so Italian, those last names of you guys. You probably have family members that are still in Italy somewhere with those names.
Probably. But we just bonded immediately. It was really cool and great working with her. I loved her. She was really tremendously talented and really easy to work with and fun. She's a very smart actor. She's pretty much like she is in front of the camera. She's really smart and very strategic, and her decisions are really thought out, and it was just really a pleasure working with her.
Buddy, talk a little bit about, you know, like, I got a little confused in episodes 9 and 10, like, when you were shooting out of order, like, those were, you know, you got to put the actors in the mindset of, like, because we're shooting a lot of scenes that were in 10, but we're shooting them early in the schedule. So it's tough to, like, you know, but like you said, from all the directing in German TV, you were able to keep track of where things were. I wrote number 9, but I was forgetting, like, is this 9 or 10 that we're shooting, you know?
Yeah. You know, Steve.
And a lot of the finale of the show, we're shooting before the actual end of the season.
Yeah. The trick with that is that, you know, I was just, our continuity was Ivanka. And the trick with that is to always go to her. She was, you know, right beside me, and just find out where were we before the scene and where are we going after the scene. And it's so important to know that, because I have to direct the actors so that their performance matches, that it has an arc, so that it's not either one note or that it's not over the top in one scene and then too low in the next scene. So I was always gauging where we were before, what happened before this scene, and what's going to happen after this scene. And then I just try to, you know, match between the two scenes and try and gauge the performance. The actors can't do that. No actor could ever gauge their performance from scene to scene when you shoot out of order. So that's why, as a director, you really have to understand where they should be emotionally and just try to direct them that way. This was the first day, Steve. This was our first day of shooting. But Steve, oh, you weren't even here the first day. You came in on the second week, I guess. Yeah.
You know, I was there for the... Which scene are you at? I kind of went out of order here. Yeah. What are you guys watching right now?
I'm watching with Clive. She's in the hallway and she's fighting Clive.
That's right. Because I came when you were shooting six, and which was, you know, mostly scheduled in order. And then when we got into seven, that's right, nine, and ten, then we started mixing it up. Six, since it was all in the Western town.
Yeah.
But I think that was the first day of, that was the first shot of the of this episode.
Yeah. And this,
are you in with Jet now?
Yeah, that's it. We're at Jet now, and this was an empty room that the production designer Roscoe built into this broom closet or whatever it's supposed to be. This is right outside the hallway leading to the studio. So this is a set that didn't really exist. It was just a room that he built for.
We had to use what we had on the stage and try and turn it into something usable on the show. So we were just, I think we were, you know, you and Mark were there prepping earlier, just searching around everywhere, especially for number eight, to find like, where do we have, what do we, what haven't we used and how do we use it for the show?
Yeah.
And are we on the Dauntless now?
Yeah. I noticed, Steve, that you guys did that in episode eight as well. You used a lot of the hallways that bring us into the studio, like the hallway going from the cafeteria, the canteen, into the studio. You used that in episode eight, and it worked really good.
There was an empty stage we used for the Bulgarian lottery that wasn't being used anymore for the lottery, so we had that access to that, just had to dress it differently.
Yeah. This stuff, it was amazing for me. I've never shot science fiction before. I loved shooting on the ship. I just loved, you know, the green screen. I didn't know how I'd take to it, but I just really grew to love it. I just love shooting all this stuff.
One of the best set, one of the best new sets is the Bridge of the Dauntless.
Yeah.
And the look of the Dauntless is great too, the VFX shot. So it's a good combo. But buddy, it must be great for you to direct such a variety of episodes on the show, to do a Western, to do a comedy action, and then to do a heavy mythology one like 9 and 10. It keeps things fresh.
Yeah. I never thought in my entire life I'd ever get to do a Western, let alone a science fiction Western. So that was awesome. But, you know, only somebody as crazy as Mark would think, yeah, let Buddy do the Western sci-fi episode. And I just love him for that. And I just thought it was great. And also, the thing, when we were doing that, too, we spoke the same language. I mean, Mark and I, we pretty much loved the same filmmakers. So we had a shorthand. We could talk about films and scenes and shots. And he always understood what I meant, and I understood what he wanted. And so it really worked out well.
So with the emotional stuff, with, you know, coming off of number eight, which he did really well, and
yeah,
being pissed at Zazie, and
yeah. Well, she's a really fine actress. I mean, you know, she's off hand.
She's good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a tough schedule for all the actors. I mean, it was like we had full days and a lot of scenes, a lot of dialogue. I mean, it was, everyone had to come prepared, not just the actors, but everyone had to, so we could keep the schedule going. And as we'll talk about later, I make a cameo as an actor, and I'll talk about how nervous I was to actually screw up, and I didn't want to, you know, hold back the scheduling of everything with some bad acting. But buddy, you saved me, so thank you.
Come on, you were a two-take actor. We got it right away. There was no problem.
I was nervous, though. I was like, kept thinking, I'm like, I'm going to get some flack from the actors. I'm like, what is this non-professional doing here? Keep holding us back. Here it is. I think we're coming up to it right now. Or I might be a little heady in the video.
No, it's really cool. Shani was really great. It was lovely working with her. She's really a perfect Lucas, really evil.
But I mean, they were, and then obviously that Sufo on the right is our line producer. And I don't think the actors knew that we were actually doing this, and they really got a kick out of it. I mean, Vikash told me afterwards, he's like, that was my favorite scene of all both seasons. I'm like, yeah, thanks. I thought he was kidding around. He's like, no, I'm serious. Like, that was so much fun. It really energized everyone to like keep, you know, especially when we both get shot doing our own stunts. But everyone really had a fun time doing this scene. And it was like, it was so many times I'm watching on the monitor or watching on the sidelines, you know, just as an annoying producer writer. But then being in the scene, I was nervous. I didn't want to make any mistakes, you know, keep the production, you know, to keep things moving. So I was actually pretty nervous, not about my stunt, more about the lines. And like I said before, like my parents are going to be watching this Sunday. I didn't tell them I'm in the episode. So we'll see if they even notice me.
Now, Steve, do you remember this scene where we had to turn the lights off? Do you remember why?
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, we did a shot a scene earlier on where we, with a repair crew, comes aboard the Dauntless, and we left the lights on, the emergency lights. We left the lights on instead of, like, having them flash. So it actually works out here. Like, and I knew they would do an exterior shot of the power going out.
Yeah, but, you know, it really works because it just adds more to the disruption of the ship that the lights keep going on and off. And then when the repair crew comes in and the lights are on, it doesn't raise a question, because that was my mistake. I should have done that.
Damn, my Vimeo link keeps going out. So I just lost it again. I lost picture. Weird. Anyways.
Yeah, we're back with Oliver. He's Xander is waking up alone in the old room. Tanny's left him, and now he's being chased by the protectors.
Yeah. I'm kind of back where he was.
I'm mixed about the protector costume. I understand that it brings something, definitely, but
obviously it looks better at night than during the day. This was a great shot. Just out the window just to show them, you know, we only have one costume, but we're duplicating it to look like more of the aliens. So I thought they did a good job, like, duplicating the stuff here. I like the night shots of the protector.
Yeah, me too. And this close-up coming up, when he turns right here, he turns and you have a close-up of him. That's a good shot of him. My wife laughed at that scene. She loved it. You know, she didn't see it coming, so she's really surprised when he pops up outside that.
No, good. This is all stuff that, you know, I just came up in the writing part of it. Like, how is he being smart? And this also sets up another story point when they traveled to Zatar, you know. So, and then there's another beat of it. So it wasn't just a one-off thing, but it had a purpose.
Yeah.
Very good scene between the two of them. They're good together. Admiral Lucas and Schrall. Because, you know, as we'll find out in next episode, there's a lot more to learn about their backstory.
A scene like this can only work when you have great actors like these two. I mean, it's basically two people in a small room talking, but they're so fantastic. They're so talented, the both of them. They have a real chemistry that really works.
Opening scene is like more like German TV than some of the other scenes we do in Pandora.
Totally. You're right. German TV is pretty much straight ahead crime. You know, like, think about Columbo, you know, crime out of the 70s, 80s. And what we're doing here is just, you know, it's just on a different level.
Poke fun at Osborne to make him a little more like, you know, not that he's not likable, but, you know, there's some moments that I wanted of showing up. Little different side of him, obviously, when they go on the ship. But this is all, you know, from here on, this is like Jackson in control, which is something the network wanted to see.
Yeah.
This is where it really starts right here, is when she's telling Osborne, you're not in charge anymore. You know, I'm going to lead us to the ancients. And everyone's like, agrees, this is time to go.
Yeah, he plays it so great, too. I find him really sympathetic. I always did. Even though sometimes he plays, you know, unsympathetic, I find him sympathetic even when he's unsympathetic. He's just that's what a great actor brings to a role. Finds some way to get you to like him. And that's what Noah does.
Now, Steve, the notion that Osborne killed his wife first came up in season one, I think episode 6 or so. Was it always part of the character from the initial story pitch, or was that something that came up during the writing of season 1?
I think Mark always had it in there that he had done something to his wife. We weren't sure what happened or how it was involved. So, you know, obviously those paying close attention could tie back to that episode, but we were always going to explain it at some point. But I think it was there. You know, some stuff definitely evolves as you know, the episodes and seasons come together, and certain things we know we want to hit on or reveal later, but other things just evolve. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Roy Scantron always had a sister, and the way we used it was not always the plan originally. I don't want to spoil anything, but he mentions he has a sister, number 207, but it wasn't always the case that we, who we'd see and why and what it means to the show.
Oh, really? Wow. See, Steve, this is one of those moments where the lights goes out. See, and it just adds something that I'm sort of looking back at.
It's the sound design. It gives it more to do with the weird.
Yeah.
You know, ships working, not working.
Yeah. So in some ways, I'm glad we had to do it. But, you know, let's face it. It basically was because of the repair crew, which I think it's coming up.
So that was shot. The repair crew was shot first, and then we're like, "Oops, we left the lights on the whole time." But it doesn't. You know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, we shot this scene first, and then we realized afterwards, damn, the lights are on; they should be off.
So here comes the repair crew. This is something I was hoping. Like, you know, there's always something I put in a script, and I'm like, I don't want the network or whatever to take it out. And this was like Osborne wearing these goofy glasses. I just wanted this to stay, and. You know, thankfully it did, and he's very funny, and I like this moment. Plus, it's like he's giving Jack some shit about he doesn't want to wear them, but then you'll see later on that it pays off, that it's a good thing he wore them. And he loved it. He loved playing this kind of stuff. It's, you know, it's different than you've seen Osborne in the past. So this stuff, I love this stuff. But here you see there's no emergency lights on, no flashing, nothing. So this was shot earlier.
Well, this is, if you're talking about the protector ship, this is because this ship has been there for years.
We in 109, it crashed after the EarthCom took out all the ships.
Yeah.
I might be a little behind you in terms of what we're looking at. But this was another use of the Xander hologram thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know. Maybe was your wife shocked again that it's not a protector, it's Xander?
Yeah, she was actually. She thought that was really cool. Yeah, my wife loves the cast. I mean, my wife didn't see the season one with me. I saw season one alone. And so she, everything for her was new and fresh, and she really truly loved it. And she just thinks, you know, the characters are so strong. And she's, you know.
They did a good, you know, this is another, you know, standing set that we had that we, you know, dressed and you shot on an angle, give it a different look in terms of like other things we've seen, but you know, this and the whole dark city at night, like it's just gives a great mood to the whole episode. The scene, the stuff with them together. It's crazy that it doesn't feel that long ago when we shot all this. And I guess it wasn't.
It's not, man. Shot this in August, September. I think we shot this in September.
Yep.
Yeah.
Give credit to, you know, Chris the Crafty Apes, Aaron Ratner, our, you know, another producer in post. Like, you know, as busy as our schedule was writing stuff and, you know, physical production of the show, the post schedule was really difficult. It's amazing all the stuff came together.
You know, the fact that you say that, I have to tell you, and Mark knows this as well, when I came onto the show, I didn't realize how much work that required. Like, so watching season one, I was blown away by the effects. I thought it was the most amazing thing to see the show with these effects. So as I'm directing, at least in the beginning, I'm thinking, let's just shoot everything against green screen. If you remember, Steve, I was shooting so many things against green screen thinking it wasn't going to be a thing. And then I realized how difficult that is for Chris to not only direct his episode and cut it and do all the effects for every show. And then I really had to learn. You had to be really careful with green screen. You couldn't just use it just for the fact of using it. Remember, we shot one of the announcements against a green screen. That was, just something we didn't need to do. And I had to learn that in the show, because I had to learn to really be careful and think about your backgrounds. And yeah. and you can't just, you know, you can't just use green screen for everything. You can't. You have to use real backgrounds as much as you can.
Right.
It makes the show more
especially with the schedule we had. Like, as difficult as it was to shoot the show, the post schedule was really crunched. I mean, it you know, and it's just like, you know, we keep finishing an episode and then there's just, you know, the shots pile up.
You know, I was like a kid, you throw them into a candy store and say, take whatever you want. And I was just taking every piece of candy I thought I could have. And then I realized, wait a minute, you can't do this. So I think by the end, and I sort of got, you know, got with the program, but it did take me a while to realize you can't shoot everything behind the green screen.
Right, unless you're the Mandalorian.
And, you know, and the sets were so great too. So
yeah, I think with the Mandalorian's craft service budget is probably the same as our entire season.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So if I'm watching with you guys, are you guys up to Osborn in the ship with everyone?
Yeah, he's in the ship with Captain Fontana.
Those glasses, the hilarious glasses that he wears. Very funny. I think they're actually tough to see through, right? I think they were actually...
I mean, he told me he wanted to take them off as soon as he could. So he takes them off as soon as Fontana's off the ship. This shot of all the ships fleeing when they're abandoning ship saved me because I missed a shot. I didn't get a shot of the crew running through the halls getting off the ship.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody, maybe it was you, Peter, who asked me if I had that shot or if I shot that. And it was just so pressed for time. That was a shot I didn't get. And the editors or Mark saved it by just putting all those ships escaping from the Dauntless.
Yeah. That pod thing, I think, is from 103 last year when Jax gets ejected from the ship by Greg. We used that. And I thought we'd shot more stuff on the ship of people running off, but I guess we didn't pick that up. We were always trying to get pickups of, like, you know, crew moving around the ship and stuff like that.
We did that, Steve, but we didn't get that one shot. I should have just done one shot where everybody just runs through the hall. And that's the one shot I didn't get.
Yeah, but we, with all the pods leaving, it's neat.
You guys,
they already had the shot from last season with the pod leaving, which we've established is that's an Earthcom way of getting off a ship. So it's great to use it again.
Saved it. This scene now with Shrall and Lucas in her office. This is a really cool scene. Again, it's almost like a Game of Thrones scene where you just have two really great characters talking to each other. Which some of the best scenes in Game of Thrones just involve two characters talking. And this had that quality to me, especially with the British accents. I couldn't get over the British accents.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
They're a great scene. I remember, you know, watching this one in Video Village, and it didn't change much from when I wrote it. It was just like an, you know, it's a big moment for Shrall, like finding out that he might be not who you think he is. And, you know, I loved, they were like really good in this one. I was like, wow, they brought up a mediocre written scene, you know, with some good acting. Wow, that's pretty cool.
I think,
but there's always, you know, all the scenes in like Osborn's residence is, they have a different vibe than the rest of the show, which is good.
When did you shoot this? Was this from season one?
It was from episode 4 of this season.
Episode 4, which is, yeah, we established when he gets captured. Which we talked about in number 3 of 203, and then we shot this in 4. But in 203, you kind of learn, you know, at some point that he did get captured by the Zatarians. 204, you find out you see what happened to him.
Yeah.
And the network likes those moments where we cut in things like that. So a lot of times they make suggestions to put, you know, those in. A lot of times we're just doing it ourselves. For storytelling, but they like that on the CW, so we were putting them in.
Yeah. Well, you did that in episode 207 too with Xander's brother, cut him into some scenes that really looked great.
Right, which is interesting because I think those were shot later. So we do that. You know, we do both, or like you kind of use stuff that we see later, or we, you know, use stuff that we shot before. But that one definitely, you know, it was a great shot of Zion. So it was like, you know, they really add to it. I love those shots in.
Well, you took those shots were shot for 210 and you put them in 207. It really works.
Mm-hmm.
He dies great here. I mean, I thought he's died, but he really hit the floor hard, and I was worried for him.
Well, let's just say, you know, he's not dead. He's electrocuted, like Sufo and I. There's a difference. He definitely is better at twitching on the ground. That actually is the baton that we used in 103 last year that Xander takes out Lieutenant Collins. So, yeah. But Vikash is, you know, he's solid in every episode. We're lucky to have him in all the episodes this season. You know, he was a big change for him. He had, you know, stayed in Sophia the entire run of the show, which he didn't do last year. He went back and forth. So it was just great to have him around. I have to say he's the most unlike his character in person. He's different in person in a great way.
You almost don't recognize him when he comes in, when he comes off the set at the end of the day and he's dressed in his normal clothes. You can't recognize him. Ben too. You know, when I met Ben, when I met Raylan in real life outside my apartment, I didn't know who he was. He told me he was working on the show, but I didn't know he was Raylan. And Raylan's one of my favorite characters. That's how different Ben looks in real life without the makeup.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people feel the same way. This is another scene that you were talking about, how like stuff we were coming up. We always wanted to have, you know, Jax putting the pieces together in the moment with Raylan and Jet together. Like, you shot that really well, the two of them kind of being buddies and showing how their relationship has really evolved from the beginning when Raylan was like, I can't believe this guy's my roommate.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that was in the script, and that's the reason that Jax gets the idea to bring everybody together for the Ancients.
Right, but she's putting the pieces together and being proactive. It's really good stuff.
It really has a strong story point.
I think coming up is one moment where you could see Oliver's flesh-colored cast on his left hand as they're walking towards the camera. I think there's a wider shot of this. This might have been the first shot. This is the first shot of the planet, I think.
That's right. You're right.
This was the first shot.
Yeah. I loved having a jib arm on set. We shot this stuff with the jib arm. Having a jib arm all the time on set was really just amazing as a director. That doesn't happen all the time. This was
It's also amazing seeing like the Max and the crew like work that thing. It's not easy, you know. Yeah. To hit those marks and everything.
This scene with Priscilla and Raylan in Xander's office, I got an email from Mark, I guess, the morning we shot this scene, and he asked me to make sure to direct a moment where Priscilla is uncomfortable, where Jax is uncomfortable being in this office and, you know, realizing she's going to have to take over, you know, Xander's role. And I remember because it wasn't in the script at the time, and it was just something Mark wrote me this email and said, you got to get this moment. It's important. And when I was on set, I was so crazed that day. I shot two takes without this moment. I completely forgot. And just before we were about to wrap out the set, I realized I forgot something really important, and then I shot it. And I think I got it with one take, and I'm glad I did because it's a great moment. It's a great idea where she feels she realizes she has to take over the captainship, but she's not comfortable about doing it. And it sort of fits with the dialogue here as well, that she's unsure. She doesn't know what she's going to say.
Yeah, I mean, she's put in a position of, she's the captain of the ship. She's leading him to Asmodeus 6. And it's a big undertaking, you know.
Yeah. It's just more
so I think with the buttoning of the scene, with her finally taking the seat, it's like, that's a great scene button. It's a great note for Mark to send to set, you know.
Mark would do that. Mark would send me emails. You know, as he would get these ideas, and it would be emails about details just to give a little bit more life to the character, give a little bit more dimension. Sometimes humor, you know, there was like, you know, with Mark, I think it's really about the details of character. That's what makes them real. And that's what makes us like them so much. And, you know, you too, Steve, as a writer, I was attracted to the characters of the show. I mean, I like the space stuff and I like the fighting stuff, but I love the characters. And I think that's really, for me, the driver of the show. It's all the characters really work. They're really great.
So Xander is a Zatarian. Oliver said he had new respect for Ben having to wear the contacts all day, which Ben does every single day. It's tough on the eyes. Oliver said, and he was like, wow. And Ben does fighting sequences and everything, you know, wearing those contacts. He just gets used to them, but it is tough.
It is tough.
So he got to feel what it was like for a Zatarian for one day. This was obviously a day that we went on location. We went to the Endica National Palace of Culture, which we've shot at before, just never this area. So something new for us, but we had seen in season one that we thought it's somewhere we'll go back again.
Okay, again, and that was space. The space stuff just is amazing. It just really looks great.
Yeah, the fleet of ships showing up.
Yeah. Steve, we're up now where Shral is in handcuffs with Lucas, and she's threatening the crew. She's threatening to kill Shral
if they give up. Yeah, so, I mean, things are really coming together quick at the end here. This is, you know, I think the pacing of this episode is just super solid all around. This is, I have to say, one of the, there's no, you know, dull points in this one. And it's a good watch, I have to say. And then, obviously, there's a lot of VFX shots in this one that you know, make it good, too.
This is also for Shani, for Lucas. This is a great scene for Lucas. She's just so powerful, yeah. And he is too. I mean, the two of them together just really work.
So, yeah, I mean, that was always the ending of Nine was the confrontation between the two of them, and then the big reveal, you know, which dovetails back to the teaser. But this was always the end of Nine. Some of the scenes we shot with Xander and Tina were kind of, we could have gone back and forth in 9 and 10.
Yeah.
But the ending of this one was always the same.
Yeah. Now we're back
from the initial story. From the initial story concept,
we're back on Xatar with Xander and Tierney. Again, the thing that's really, as a director, always amazing to me is that Lucas, Meredith Lucas, in this show is really just evil and just an evil character, but in life, she's such a sweet person. I mean, I couldn't really, you know, put together the person that was hanging out behind the camera with the person who then would stand in front of the camera and have all this dialogue, say these things, say them so convincingly.
She's really amazing. Super nice.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, we also weren't sure where we were going to take her character. Obviously, at the beginning, she comes off as very nice and stuff like that, but it wasn't going to always last like that. She's very friendly with Jax and Xander. But it goes a lot differently. It goes a lot differently as the season progresses.
Steve, she's evil. Come on. And then this is the shock climax. This is, you know, this is our cliffhanger to take us into 210.
Yeah, I think one of the network notes was like to have Osborn figure out what had happened rather than being, you know, told. So here he gives a look of like he puts it together what exactly had happened.
Yeah. And you could only do that with a great actor like Nolan. You can really play that role.
Got the looks. It's cool with the Steve McQueen turtleneck. It's a good moment here for him.
Beautiful, Nolan.
To be continued.
To be continued, along with the podcast. It will to be continued. But, buddy, you know, it was great to working with you. We'd worked together in the past. We wanted you in season one. It just didn't work out with scheduling. So it was great to have you. And especially, I mean, you did an amazing job to bring those four episodes together on time and to be as good as they are. Like, it was great. So this was a great experience.
I'll play the same. You know what? I love working with you and Mark. I feel like we are kindred spirits. So it was just a gift for me to be able to do that. And also, you guys let me do something I could never, ever get to do out here. Never get to do a Western sci-fi, you know, a Roy Scantron. That was almost a road movie in space. And so I'm just really grateful and thankful. And I work with you guys any day that I can. Let's just stay in touch.
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, and you, luckily enough, you had the shortest commute outside of anyone who's local in Sofia. You coming from Berlin is a lot closer than for us in the United States or the actors from the UK. So, you weren't that far away, but it was
75 minutes.
It was great to have you, and it was a commitment. You know, you had to stay in town for quite a while, but
I loved it. Come on, I like Sofia. It was great.
It was great. I mean, this is a good memories we'll have. You know, you, Max, and I working so closely together. You know, for all those days. And then, you know, obviously Max in 208, like, picked up a lot from you, buddy, which helped him, which was shot. 208 was shot at the very end of the season. Yeah, written by Peter. Let's not forget, co-written by Peter.
Oh, Peter! Wow, that's right. Congratulations, Peter. It was a really good episode.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Max was fantastic.
Yeah, great guy.
Well, and with that, let's wrap things up. Listeners, thanks for being here. If you like the show, please give us a subscribe on iTunes and give us a nice star rating. And if you like the episode, hop onto IMDb and give it a good star rating on there, too. We really do appreciate it. We love making this show, and anything that can help the network see that we have a good fan base out there, we'll make sure we can keep doing it. So for myself, Buddy, Steve, thank you guys so much for being here. To the audience, hope you will join us again next week where we talk about the final episode of the season, episode 10, season finale, the next episode of Unboxing Pandora.